This is an NPR News special. I'm Ed Gordon in Washington. It's going to be close. If there's one thing most people can agree on this year, it's that the race between John Kerry and George W. Bush will likely come down to a handful of states, and a key factor in many of those states will be the black vote. So what are the candidates doing to court those votes, and how big of a turnout will we likely see among African Americans? And no matter who sits in the White House, how will issues of importance to black Americans be dealt with after the election? Those are some of the questions we're going to talk about this hour, and we want to hear from you. How important is the black vote? And most importantly, are you going to show up to the polls on November 2nd? Tell us why or why not. Our number here in Washington is 1-800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. A bit later in the show, we'll talk with Jamu Green of MTV's Rock the Vote and hip-hop mogul Russell Simmons about their efforts to get out the vote. But first, we're joined by two guests to talk about the significance of the black vote in this year's election. Ron Walters is a professor of government and politics at the University of Maryland, College Park. He joins us now by phone from Frostburg, Maryland. And George Stephanopoulos is the anchor of ABC's This Week with George Stephanopoulos, and he joins us by phone from Washington, D.C. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us. Appreciate it. Ron, let me go to you first. The black vote, do you consider this the deciding factor in this year's election?
Yes, the black vote was extremely important in the 2000 election cycle, constituting 13% of the entire vote. And, of course, 90% of it went toward Al Gore. So no Democratic presidential nominee can win without a very strong black turnout, as we had in 2000.
George, when you have been able to talk to candidates, not just vying for the White House, but positions across this country, how often have you heard the idea that the black vote is key for victory?
Never more than before than this campaign. I mean, I think it's so critical, this campaign. As the professor was saying, the African-American vote was 13% of the vote last time around. If because of new registration, new efforts to register new voters in places like Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Ohio, Jacksonville, Florida, South Florida, blacks come out in greater numbers this time around and increase their overall percentage of the electorate to 14 or 15%, I think that's there's a good chance that could be the difference in this campaign. And, you know, there was some concern, I think, earlier on before the debates about whether John Kerry would receive the 90% of the black vote that Al Gore got, the 90% of the black vote that Walter Mondale and Michael Dukakis got. I think that's going away as we get closer to Election Day and as we come out of his performance in the debates. And I would expect this time around to see a record black vote and to see John Kerry match those who got 90% of the vote in the past.
Ron, do you agree with that?
Oh, certainly I agree with that. Last time around, the black vote was 20% of Al Gore's vote, so again, can't do without it. But when you look at what's happening this time around, we've got a registration boom going on, and a lot of the places where it's taking place are in the inner cities of this country. Cleveland, for example, 250,000 more voters this time than in 2000. Philadelphia, the highest registrations in 21 years. And also, all you have to do is go down to Florida and you turn over a rock and somebody is registering voters. Voices for American Families has registered 50,000 voters in Florida, and they're mostly minority. When you put that together with 10 other organizations, you've had a monumental increase in Florida. So I would think that one of the things that the polls not picking up is this registration boom, and that's really going to turn the tide.
Although
I want to say one final thing. You've got the same factor among young people. I speak on college campuses where I am now, and I've never seen the percentage of high percentage of registration.
Right, and they're not necessarily indicated in these polls. We'll be talking about the young voter in just a few moments with Jamu Green and Russell Simmons. George, you want to say quickly, and then we'll go to the phones.
We have started to see some evidence that not only are voters being registered, but they're really coming home and voting. I was speaking with a senior Democrat today who had some polling late last night out of Florida that showed they believe that 30% of the electorate has already voted. And according to their polls, Kerry is winning among that early vote by 10 points.
All right, let me go to the phone lines. Cassandra from Cleveland, Ohio, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my phone call.
Sure.
I'm a voter in Cleveland, and I intend to. I'm a black voter in Cuyahoga County, and I, of course, intend to vote. What concerns me is that I heard a comment the other day that there were just as many votes, black votes, discounted here in Cleveland and Cuyahoga County as some counties in Florida. And as I think about how many black votes have been disenfranchised that we know in the last election and that we at least expect in this one, I wonder how far back does this trend go? I mean, has anyone looked at the numbers, for example, in the Reagan-Carter race?
Thanks for your call. Ron, that continues to be a paramount issue.
Yes, it does. And, of course, Cuyahoga County did not spoil as many ballots as there were in Florida. I think outside of Florida, you've got to go to Cook County, where 100,000 were spoiled. And this has been going on for a long time. No, what happened is that Florida let us sort of look under the skirts of the democratic process and to see things that we thought had been eliminated by the Voting Rights Act that are still there, practices that are still going on.
And in fact, the Columbus Dispatch did a report that came out just last weekend that showed in Ohio, the areas that have the heaviest black registration and the poorest areas in the state are the most likely to have the punch card ballots that are the easiest to spoil and the least likely to be fully counted.
George Stephanopoulos, because you'll have to leave us in just a few moments, and we appreciate your time. You're running, as most of us are, as we lead into this election. But let me ask you, in your opinion, can John Kerry win the White House without a record turnout of black voters?
I suppose he can, but it's tough. And I think that's one of the things that he's counting on, not only a record turnout of black voters, but a record percentage of those voters going for him. I think one of the hopes of President Bush coming out of his last campaign was that he was going to increase his percentage among the black vote, at least in his first campaign. But you've got Florida, you've got the war in Iraq, you've got President Bush's economic policies, which were perceived to be tilted towards the wealthy. All of that has worked against him, and he hasn't built the kind of bond with the black community that he had hoped for. One asterisk, though, and I'm going to be watching very closely Ohio and Michigan, where there are two statewide ballot initiatives calling for bans on gay marriage. I know there's been some concern in the Democratic campaign and some hope in the Bush campaign that, especially among culturally conservative blacks, that issue is going to drive them away from Senator Kerry and towards President Bush. We'll have to see.
Ron, follow up on that, if you would.
I have a real question about that, because I think when you look at the voting concept in the black community, it's very rare that you get a single issue like that, which is really sort of off the mark. Basically, you're talking about the favorability rating, which is the big number.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies poll in the 2000 cycle, George Bush's favorability rating was 39%. This time it's 22%. It's gone down. And I would think that that's a summary judgment about the president's overall behavior, political behavior, in office, and I think that probably will carry the day.
George, before we let you leave, one quick question to you. What about the balancing act that, quite frankly, both candidates have to do in terms of catering to the black vote and not alienating white America?
You know, I've seen less of that this year than I ever have in the past. I think, for example, just look at, 4 years ago, the Gore campaign couldn't decide what to do with President Clinton, whether to have him try to go into the major cities to turn out, especially the African-American vote in the final days. No ambivalence in the Kerry campaign. They had that huge rally in Philadelphia, President Clinton moving on to Florida, Arkansas, other states in these final days. So I think that has been less of a concern this time around.
George Stephanopoulos, thank you very much for making time. We know you're on the run.
Take care.
Of ABC News with us this day. Greatly appreciate it. Ron Walter stays with us. Ron, we'll be talking to you twofold as a professor who obviously studies politics and is one of the most preeminent masters of this game, if you will, in this country, but also as one who has been a participant in crafting, if you will, campaigns before, and we'll ask that expertise of you as well. Let me back up, though, Ron, if you would. The Joint Center suggested most recently, Joint Center Political Studies, that the Bush support may indeed grow to as high as 18%, which is a surprise to many when those numbers came out. Did it, in fact, surprise you?
It did surprise me, and that's pretty much what George Stephanopoulos was talking about. Because I think that that rise of 9%, here we're talking about the fact that in 2000, the support number for George Bush on that Joint Center poll was 9%. This time, 18%, 100% increase. That surprised some people. The account for that, by on the one hand, the president's faith-based programs and those people that have bought into it, and on the other, the issue of gay marriage. Again, what I was saying was that it's rare for the black community to vote on issues like that. I think when you put those up against the number one issue in the black community right now is the economy. That, I think, is going to override that. In addition to that, I think you've got a lot of people coming into this for the first-time voters who are going to override it as well.
We're also taking emails, we should suggest. I'll give you that email address in just a moment. But Chris Franco from San Diego, California, has a question here, Ron, and if you'll tackle this, we'd appreciate it. And that's the question of whether or not Colin Powell remains in the second-term cabinet of President Bush, should he win. And what effect would that have on what many can see consider the beacon, if you will, of issues for African-Americans, particularly of import, in the sense that Colin Powell is the moral compass there?
Well, Colin Powell was a moral compass, but he wasn't exactly a beacon for issues that the black community feels very strongly about. As a matter of fact, one of the reasons why blacks are probably going to vote strongly against President this time is that there really was no beacon for the issues that blacks feel strongly about. But I think that the guessing in Washington for almost everybody that I have heard is that Colin Powell will not be in a second Bush administration if he wins. Primarily because he's been excluded from a lot. He was not at the Democratic Convention, and that spoke just volumes. At a time when Condoleezza Rice, who was also in foreign policy establishment of that administration, not only was there, but she also spoke. He has been outflanked so many times with the infighting in that administration that I think he's probably had enough.
All right, we're going to go to caller three, which would be Stacy in Kansas City. Stacy, you're on.
Yes, good day to you guys there. Your panel has pretty much covered a question that I had about underestimating the poll numbers and miscuing the poll numbers by those who they don't poll. But I would like to say this much, if given the opportunity, that the comment about Colin Powell being a beacon for concerns of the black community, to take nothing away from Mr. Powell and his achievements as an African-American, which I respect greatly. But the administration, to me, has said nothing throughout the course of their time and their term about me as an African-American and my concerns in the community. And my question is that that 18% that he may have picked up in the African-American community, does Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice represent that much of a percentage that the administration is truly catering to and completely overlooking the remainder of the African-Americans and the problems that we face?
All right, Stacy, thanks very much. Ron?
Condoleezza Rice, when you do a public opinion study, is always in the low single digits. Colin Powell, on the other hand, is always at the top or somewhere near the top. And that is a phenomenon of American politics. He has been for a decade and a half now someone that Americans say that they would support for president of the United States. And in polls taken by blacks, he has struggled upward. Coming from about the 30s or mid-30s now to the 70s and 80s. And so he's grown in the black community in terms of those people that support him.
All right, Ron, we're going to take a break here. We're talking about the black vote and its significance in this year's presidential election. We're taking your calls at 1-800-989-TALK. Also, your emails at totn@npr.org. I'm Ed Gordon for NPR News. This is an NPR News special on the African-American vote and the 2004 election. I'm Ed Gordon in Washington, D.C., and we're taking your calls. We also want to know if you're planning to vote. Give us a call at 1-800-989-TALK. We're also taking your emails at totn@npr.org. Ron Walters is still with us. He's a professor of government and politics at the University of Maryland. And joining us now is Joe Watkins. He's a Republican strategist and radio talk show host. He comes to us from the Audio Post in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Joe, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be there. Glad to be with you, Ed.
Yeah, good to talk to you. One of the things that we want to utilize now, your expertise as well as Ron Walters, is a peek behind the curtain, if you will, on people who are running for office, particularly the two men who are vying for 1600 Pennsylvania. We know that both of you have worked on national campaigns. How much planning, Joe, goes into cultivating the black vote?
Well, this year, a lot of planning is going into cultivating the black vote. I mean, in years past, unfortunately, you know, the African-American vote has really been written off by one party and taken for granted by the other party. And the best way to check that is to look at the dollars that were spent in the community. But this year, money is actually being spent by the Republican Party and by the president's campaign to reach out to the African-American community. And that may in part account for the higher percentages, the 18% that you see in the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies poll. His message is getting through to a lot of African-Americans, and African-Americans certainly who are middle-class people, who appreciate the benefits of the tax cut that he gave Americans. And for small business owners, people who own beauty salons like the one my wife frequents, and barber shops and automotive centers and small tech companies, these small business owners have benefited from the effects of the president's tax cut.
And but, Joe, I'm sure you've heard this, and while that may be true, forgive the interruption, but pick up on this. People would suggest many in the African-American community that it is a mixed message, the fact that Bush has turned down an invitation by the NAACP to speak at the convention, turned down an appearance, and I should say, for full disclosure, an appearance on BET where I would have conducted the interview. He did accept the National Urban League. And many of these see this as a slap in the face of black America.
Right. Well, he did accept the invitation to speak to the National Urban League because he knew that it was a sincere offer. And the Urban League was very balanced about the way it went about it. They didn't do anything to poison the well. They didn't try to paint a picture for the audience about the president or about his opponent. They just let both candidates come and speak freely. And the audience was left to take away the perceptions that they had. But at the NAACP, unfortunately, that wasn't quite the case. As we all know, Kwesi Mfume and Julian Bond, two men that I respect for their past work in Democratic politics, but nonetheless, they've invested a lot in the Democratic Party, made some difficult remarks about the president. One, Julian Bond, I think, compared him to the Nazis, and Kwesi Mfume made some remarks as well that really did help to poison the well. And right. It was clear that had he attended that convention, he would have been poorly received. The well had been poisoned for him to speak to the group.
Ron Walters, I'm sure you're chomping at the bit. Go ahead.
Well, I think that whatever may have happened between the president and the black community, what really I think is turning off a lot of black voters right now is the ballot security programs that are run by the Republican Party. There's widespread belief, and it's all over the radio, television, black community right now, that the Republican Party is attempting to stop black voters from voting. And in a number of states, they're going to station people at the polls to check ID at predominantly black precincts. This is the kind of selective suppression of the black vote that has been rumored about, but we're going to see it, I think, up close in this election.
Well,
so this is going to certainly is going to affect those people who may even be thinking of voting for the Republican Party and for the president.
Well, you're absolutely right when you say that it's hearsay, because that's what it is. It's hearsay, and what the Democrats have done an excellent job of doing is certainly of portraying Republicans as people who would want to suppress the vote, and certainly in demonizing the president. And fortunately, the president and the campaign has worked hard to combat that by spending dollars in the African-American community to advertise, to get out the message that he has, which is a very positive, upbeat message. And I think that certainly for a lot of African-Americans who are not emotionally attached to the Democratic Party and who are looking at the candidates for what they stand for and on the issues of health care and education and taxes and so on and so forth, I think the president's message is resonating, especially if you look at a lot of the people of faith. I pastor a church in addition to my work in business and my work in politics, and I know that for a lot of people of faith, the issues that Senator Kerry's position of support for partial birth abortion, for instance, and the issue of gay marriage, which the president fought very strongly against, with the support of many black ministers, is making them take a second look. And I know even on my radio show, I've had people call in and saying, you know what, I'm a Democrat, but this time I just can't vote for Kerry. I'm voting for George Bush. For those reasons.
Well, it's going to be very difficult to do that. When you look at the top issue in the black community, it is the state of the economy. And the unemployment, of course, in the black community is now up 12%. In places like New York City, half of the black males are unemployed. And not as many people have benefited from whatever tax incentives the president has given them so far. Most people have not been able yet to benefit from those tax incentives. There simply hadn't been enough time. Cool. Neither has it been created enough jobs. So when you look at the economic picture, the economic picture, of course, is very bad in the black community, and it doesn't help to have the underlying $2 trillion being spent in Iraq.
All right, gentlemen.
There's a lot of resentment in the black community that is money.
I've got to sneak a call in.
Communities.
Sneak a call in here from Wayne in Kansas City. Wayne?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Gordon. I just want to make a couple comments and I have a question here.
Quickly for me, if you will, Wayne.
Okay. With regard to the wedge issue of gay marriages and the constitutional ban, I like to say that that is playing here in with some of the voters here in Kansas City, and I am very surprised, some of the black voters here in Kansas City, with regard to the faith issue. However, I don't think it's a huge population, but some of those voters some of the black voters are taking that into consideration. However, I do feel that Mr. Kerry's issues with regard to the economic policies, Joe, you talked about the president's issues with regard to small business. I'm a small business man. I'm an entrepreneur. I have not seen any of those tax issues, those tax dollars, trickle down to black entrepreneurs. Black entrepreneurs are still struggling to survive, and we need capital.
Right. I know, I'm one of them. I am a black entrepreneur, too.
Well, right now, George Bush's policies are not working for the black businessmen. I mean, he touts that, but it's not working. Also, I hope we can continue to move forward. Mr. Kerry gets elected, we can continue to move forward with regard to the industrial prison complex.
Right, Wayne, I need your question, if you have it.
That's an issue that seems to always be on the back burner. African-American males are still the majority population in those jails. We need to address those issues with regard to black males being the largest population in those prisons, the industrial prison complex.
All right, Wayne, thank you for your call. Appreciate it. Ron Walters, let me ask you, do you believe either candidate is addressing issues of import to African-Americans on a consistent and sustained basis during their stumps?
No. Basically, what's happening is that they've been talking in generalities, and they have not really been zeroing in on the kind of targeted issues that I think would turn black voters on, either party. And certainly, I would say that about Kerry. That's been one of the problems about looking at his policies. Talked about health care. Black people feel strongly about health care. But the question is, how will health care deal with the fact that, you know, among the 45 million people that don't have health insurance, there are disproportionately black and brown? Well, there's no plan necessarily for that. When you talk about creating jobs, here again, where are you going to create the jobs? How are they going to be targeted to the inner cities where they're needed? Rebuilding the industrial base. So even though Kerry has the best issues with respect to the domestic whole sector of domestic issues, even Kerry is not strong enough in terms of exactly how he would deal with black issues.
Ron Walters, you know, Joe, quickly for me, please.
Sure. What the president is doing, certainly for small businesses, is, I think, really important. And I can talk as somebody who has been an entrepreneur and who has been an owner of a small business. And certainly the policies that the president has championed have helped me and many of my friends who also happen to be black who are in business. We see them as beneficial. But I think the president is not talking specifically to the black community, but his programs certainly have impacted the black community. And and will when if given a chance to work. For instance, the No Child Left Behind Act, which really targets kids at grade 3 when they're around 8 years old to make sure that they can read and write proficiently. We know that when kids are left out of the process and fail at school early on, that they have a greater chance of going to jail. We want to stop that, and this president wants to stop that.
And, of course, as you know, there that
No Child Left Behind all over the country.
I knew Ron was going to jump in. And that debate goes on, and it will go on until Tuesday. Gentlemen, Joe Watkins joining us from Philadelphia, PA, a Republican strategist, and Ron Walters, professor of government and politics at the University of Maryland, College Park, joining us from Maryland. I thank you both. Greatly appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
Good to be with you.
Of course, a lot of African-American celebrities have stepped up this year and lent their voices to Get Out the Vote campaign. Here's a look.
This is George Dr. Funkenstein Clinton, and if you're looking for a way to put some cosmic funk into the universe, then become an activist.
This is Nas. It's time to take our communities back. It's time to register and vote this election day. Rock the vote.
Yo, this is Queen Latifah reminding y'all that we got the power and can't nobody stay in office unless we elect them to be there. If we don't want them there, we get rid of them by rocking the vote.
Hey, yo, what's up? This is David De La Soul, and how do I rock the vote? I take responsibility to influence my destiny. To make a difference starts with me, and so I make this final plea. It's up to us to make that change, to speak our minds in a political range. So register, vote, and represent. Wrap the vote. Peace. Daylight.
That coming from MTV, and of course that is outreach to young people, and we are hearing that we will have a record turnout of young voters this political season and this election on Tuesday. Joining us now, Jamu Green, president of Rock the Vote. She joins us from the studios at NPR West in Culver City, California. Ms. Green, thank you very much for joining us.
Ed, thank you so much for having me.
Appreciate it. And we should also note that we have a friend of mine on the line via cell phone, I bet, Russell Simmons. He's chairman and CEO of Rush Communication. He joins us on the road by phone. You both have done a lot to get the vote out. Ms. Green, let me start with you. What are you hearing across the country as you talk to young people?
There is going to be a surge to the polls by this generation that people have not seen since 1992. Young people are more engaged, they are more interested, they are paying more attention, and we've registered record numbers of young people across the country. At rockthevote.com alone, we had over 1.2 million people download voter registration forms. This is our election, and I think the candidates have recognized that. They understand how important this group is, and they're starting to try to pull them to their side. This generation is definitely going to be on November 2nd, the group to watch.
Russell Simmons, you're on the road today. Are you actually out pushing the vote today?
That's right. I'm out right now doing the same thing as she is. We're all out, as Puffy's on the road also, on a private plane. He and Mary J. Blige and Leonardo DiCaprio are stopping in the swing states right now, and we're all at work. It is an aggressive push, but see, we're doing what the culture asks us to do. We're a culture people, you know. The artists with Nelly and Will Smith and all the artists have done, you know, what Puffy is doing and Jay-Z and Beyonce and what Andre 3000 and that. All these artists, Q-Tip is doing with Rock the Vote. What we're all doing is what the people ask. In other words, the poets are doing it by the people's permission. And the fact is the people are enthusiastic in a way that no one has polled. No one knows the kind of enthusiasm that's coming to the polls. It's going to rock the vote. I'm serious. It's going to be a real bum rush to the polls. I feel it. I've been in the hood all over the country. In Ohio, we had 10,000 people come out. In Philadelphia, Will Smith had 10,000 people come to a rally. You had to register yourself or someone else in order to get in. We had two events in Michigan, in Detroit, with Eminem. In both cases, one case, we had 7,000 people, and Nas helped, and Lloyd Banks helped. Mm-hmm. Another case, we had 13,000 people. Nelly did St. Louis. We had 13,000 people come out to an event where Nelly and Wyclef and Jadakiss and LL Cool J and
so you're seeing zeal and tremendous crowds across the country.
Talk about, they come out. Last election cycle, artists did PSAs, and they were part of the process, but they're doing it now, all of them. The best example I can give is a 21-year-old Lloyd Banks, who went to 3 hip-hop summits. He went on the day his record was number one. He was in Boston with Outkast and Wyclef and others, LL Cool J and others, for a hip-hop summit. He was 21-year-old with the number one record in the country, and his only focus was getting people out registered to vote. They're doing it because they're reflections of the people's mindset. So I know we're coming to the polls.
All right.
And we're going to pick the president. But I do, one thing I don't know, I mean, I will say that they have to, whoever is in office, they'll be able to look and see that there's a different, the numbers of people who came out who were new and registered and voted. And they'll know that this new generation, this poor people's revolution, if you will, because all the rappers are about poverty. They all come out of struggle. Eminem and 50 Cent are the same.
Well, let's,
in their mind.
Let's suggest this.
People are going to pick the president, and the president will then be more accountable than the candidates have acted so far to these people.
We'll see if indeed that is the case in just a few days. I'm Ed Gordon, and you're listening to a special on the African-American vote in the 2004 election from NPR News. Jamu, we should note that you have been out and about the country taking the bus, the MTV bus around, and trying to encourage young people. Are you finding, though, that these young folks are informed, or are they voting, quite frankly, because it's the, quote, thing to do this time?
They are not voting because it's the thing to do. They're voting because they're financially stressed. They're strapped. They can't find jobs. The jobs they can find don't have health care benefits. They are concerned about the war in Iraq, the lifelong war against terror that we see on television and are told is not going to go away. And they're questioning, you know, are we going to be called to sacrifice, and are these candidates going to address these issues? And really, that's what's driving them to turn out. They're saying, you better understand my reality, what I am facing every single day, my concerns, and I'm going to vote to make sure that someone pays attention to it. And that's what's driving them. And I think exactly as Russell said, the artists that have gotten involved are responding to what's happening in the community. They're responding to a call for action and attention, and for these candidates to understand that they can't find jobs, understand that they don't have health care, understand that the fact that college tuition has risen 50% in the last 4 years means that people can't go to college, but they may have to pick up a gun to pay for school. And those are the issues they want these candidates
and
to
Russell
address.
Simmons with clearly, really, Russell, less than a minute left. Let me give you a quick word because we're going to let you go. We know you're traveling. Very quickly for me, Russell.
Well, we've polled the people that have come to our summit. We've seen over a couple hundred thousand people, and I know we've registered, God knows, with the help of all the grassroots organizations, a lot of voters, over a million, we guess, but we don't know. The numbers overall are great. But the enthusiasm, see, this generation, this hip-hop generation, picks which watch is in style. They pick which clothing is in style. They pick which soda is going to sell.
Mm-hmm.
They are not just engaging themselves. They brand the idea of voting. They made it culturally relevant.
And we'll see if
not for them, but for everyone.
And we'll see if that translates on Tuesday. We'll see if that translates on Tuesday, November 2nd. Russell Simmons, thank you very much for joining us on the road. Jamu, we'll be back with you, and we'll be back with our callers in just a moment. This is NPR News Special, The African American Vote. I'm Ed Gordon in the nation's capital. We're back with our NPR News Special. I'm Ed Gordon, continuing a look at the African-American vote in the 2004 election. We want to thank Russell Simmons, who joined us from the road, as he is encouraging young people and people in general to get out to vote. We want to know if indeed you are going to vote. We're asking you to call us 1-800-989-8255 or email us totn@npr.org. And we are still joined by Jamu Green, who is the president of MTV's Rock the Vote. And we are going to take a quick phone call here. Sarah from Oklahoma joins us. Sarah?
Yes, thank you so much. I'm especially happy to be able to talk to the gentleman who's involved with Rock the Vote. I was living in Springfield, Missouri, which is John Ashcroft's hometown, and I was forced to leave as a longtime civil rights activist when I started investigating a series of hangings of people who were immediately declared suicide. The two public hangings were young black men. You can get a lot more information by Googling the name Leonard Gakinya, G-A-K-I-N-Y-A. This administration has been racist. in their policies. It is so important for us to understand that John Kerry voted against the partial abortion bill because it's an illegal bill. It's been thrown out as unconstitutional. We can't be discouraged by the idea, pro or con, of gay marriage, and therefore vote for this administration. We must remember the rise of AIDS in the black community, particularly in young black heterosexual women. We desperately need a national referendum on the Electoral College. I feel that here in Oklahoma, since there's such an assumption that this state is going to go for the Republicans on the national level, mm-hmm. I haven't seen one advertisement since I came here for the presidential campaign. Certainly, we have a hotly contested senatorial race
right.
here. I would also
quickly
recommend
for me,
that people take a quick look at www.intelligenceproject.org. The most recent intelligence report that goes out to law enforcement all over the nation shows it's an issue about the election, and it shows many, many
okay.
politicians from the Republican Party who are openly and overtly racist. And certainly John Ashcroft, though he's not mentioned in this particular issue, he's one of them.
All right, Sarah, thank you very much for your call there. Greatly appreciate it. We should also note that there are people who are considering not voting, and one of them is Kwaku Kushindana. He joins us now. He's a what we like to call conscientious non-voter who wrote for an article titled, How Will I Vote? I Won't, and It's Not Because I Don't Care, that appeared in the October 3rd Outlook section of the Washington Post. And he'll be joining us by phone in just a few moments from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. But let me go back to Jamu Green right now and ask you, as you look at this vote, we are hearing, and it is part rhetoric, but I suspect that some people believe this, that this is the most important election of your lifetime. Do you believe most of the young people that you've talked to believe that? And do you believe that you're preaching to the choir and not those who just don't see this process as important?
Absolutely not preaching to the choir. I think that young people, especially after September 11th, this generation can't kind of be put into a box where I think other groups of young people have, where they haven't turned out in large numbers, they may not have been as engaged in the electoral process, have been. This group of voters, the unprecedented number of people that we've registered to vote, are going to be first-time voters. These are 18-year-old young people across the country who are absolutely engaged in the issues and looking for a way to be able to pay their way through school and looking to the candidates to find that way for them or help them through that. These are young people who are responding to understanding what they see on television every day as a very serious situation in Iraq and the possibility of, you know, other situations taking place in Iran or North Korea, or if things continue to go worse in Iraq, and seeing their friends, their classmates, their peers fighting on the front lines. These are not people who have, I think, just decided that this election is a cool, or that there's more attention being paid by the celebrities. This is a group of people who are responding to their daily
reality.
What
do you tell a young kid who says, I'm not going to vote because, frankly, it's just two rich white guys running for the office. I hear the same old stories, and it's not going to make a difference in my life.
I'd start by asking that young person what it is that, you know, they are concerned about when they wake up in the morning, when they walk out of their door every day and get in their car or get on the bus or walk, you know, in their neighborhood. What are the issues that they are concerned about? And I make the connection to how so many of these issues are absolutely affected by who is put into office, and not just in the White House. It's who's put into office to be your representative from Congress. It's who's your mayor. It's who's on your city council, and just making those connections. But it hasn't been that difficult to make that connection in this election cycle, because I think it is very clear that this is the most important election of their lifetime, when they have their peers and their classmates fighting and dying on the front lines in a war that we are being told is going to last a very long time. They are not able to pay their rent or pay their car note as they are strapped with, you know, almost $19,000 of student loans when they're coming out of school. These are the realities that you don't have to convince someone with. And just looking at the whole thought of someone being a conscientious non-voter, I don't even see how those two things go together. It is very clear that this generation is engaged because they do care. They do want to see an impact on the issues that affect them on a daily basis.
Well, let's bring someone in who considers himself, I think it's fair to note, a conscientious non-voter, as we suggested we'd bring to you in just a moment. And here he is, Kwaku Kushindana. He joins us now. And Kwaku, thank you very much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you so very much for the invitation, particularly to bring in a dissident voice to much of the discussion about black politics in America, sir.
Well, let me ask you this. You've received a lot of attention since the October 3rd letter that you wrote appeared in the Outlook section of the Washington Post.
It was a published article, just for a point of clarity. It was a published article in the Outlook section of the Washington Post. It was not a letter per se.
Almost a manifest, if you will. But let me ask you this.
Yes, sir.
You stated that you've been registered since the age of 18, but rarely voted. Why is that?
If we take a critical look at the political process that's been corrupted by money, the Center for Responsive Politics tracks that money, and they've also put a book called Follow the Money. And I think that if many people would take an occasion, step back and look, you'll see that the parameters by that, the two candidates have been chosen by the money class in this country. So we're really voting for people who represent those interests. Even if we look at the so-called Friends of the Negro, they leave a lot to be desired in terms of speaking to issues that affect the black community. And as long as we continue to vote as a knee-jerk reaction, they'll continue to do so.
How old are you now?
I'm the big 5'1", sir.
So at 51, how many times have you voted since age 18?
I vote in certain local elections and certain elections where things...
How many times nationally have you voted since age 18?
I think I voted for Ralph Nader for the first time, and when we put Ron Daniels on the ballot here in Louisiana, I think those two times, those are the occasions I voted on a national level.
So from 18 to 51, you could only find two men who spoke to you to drive you to the polls?
Absolutely.
Ms. Green, do you find this interesting?
I think it's unfortunate. I think that in any situation, when you look at social change or how you come about change and what has happened historically, if there were individuals in times of the need to like address significant issues affecting our community, if the individuals who didn't, you know, take a stand and actually say, I'm going to fight back against this. I'm going to fight back against being oppressed. I'm going to fight back against not being able to vote. I'm going to fight back against, you know, all of the different issues that black folks have been having to fight back against. If those leaders didn't like actually take that step and try to make that change, and instead they sat back and said, well, I'm going to conscientiously object to this, where would we be now? And so I don't think that the system is perfect, but I do know that the only way that the system can get better is if I am actually actively trying to make it better. I am actively engaged in it. And I think, you know, a lot of our civil rights leaders, a lot of the black folks who came before and allowed us to be in this position in this election as a community that can absolutely be the swing vote, the deciding factor, they would be appalled at anyone who would say, well, I'm just going to sit back and not participate because I don't agree with the system. They right. didn't agree with the system, and they fought back against it.
All right, let me bring in some callers, and then I'll promise I'll let you follow up. We'll take Walter from Charlotte, North Carolina. Walter, go ahead.
Yes, Ed, how you doing? I'm going to take it short and brief, bro. I'm an African-American brother, and like that lady said, it would be a devastating. Our ancestors fought for us just to vote. So if any black person out there would not go vote, our ancestors just dying in their graves, man. How much they had to fight for just to us to vote. I know the system's not perfect. It's not. It's two white men. And whoever like that, my preacher said Sunday, it's two white men in there. Only thing we know is going to be a white man president. Neither one of them's going to give us all, but I just think John Kerry will give our people who need, have babies and stuff like that, need a little bit of help. They'll give us a little help. But I just say, man, any black person out there, just look in the history, our ancestors would be turning over their graves, man. We don't get out there and vote. It don't make a difference. You black, look at the history where they didn't want us to vote. You got to vote, man. You got to vote. And I just don't understand how anybody who don't help out our people would not vote for them.
All right, Walter from North Carolina, thank you very much. Kwaku, I know that you've heard that argument.
Can I respond, please?
Yes, I know you've heard that argument before.
Quite quite a bit. The electoral arena is not the only arena for social transformation. Now, Dr. Claude Anderson, in his book, Black Labor, White Wealth, has an interesting chart. He looks at our voting participation and the number of black elected officials has risen, but conversely, the conditions of black people have gotten worse. And if we begin to look at it, what I have been concerned about, not whether people vote or not, people should vote their conscience, that everything has been put in the electoral arena. Other areas.
But Kwaku, what about what the caller raised? And that's the question of the historical perspective that, in fact, people shed blood for this.
If we talk about Martin Delaney, if we talk about Malcolm X, if we talk about Henry Highland Garnet, there were two traditions in the black community. The civil rights tradition simply represented one. There's been another tradition that talked about Kuja Chagalia, self-determination, that sees voting as one avenue of an overall strategy. Not voting being an end-all, be-all. That's all I'm saying.
Right, but it still doesn't speak to the issue of, and neither is mutually exclusive, it doesn't speak to, as Walter from Charlotte, North Carolina suggested, that the idea of people dying for your right to vote is something that certainly over the course of your 30-some-odd years eligible to vote, that you should have done more often than you did.
I see that there are other avenues that we can pursue. And, again, if people choose to vote, I'm not opposed to that. I think that's a wonderful thing. I encourage people to be registered. But voting has become the paramount and only game in town. That has been my concern. And for people who express dissidence, you are being dismissed. I'm not saying being inactive. I'm saying, of course, we should be active and informed. But often voting has become a knee-jerk reaction. As an example, here in Louisiana, I voted. I worked as an election commission. Those are the people that register you when you come. Most of the people come to the polls have no real idea what they're voting on. One of the persons early in the show expressed that many people are informed. I would beg to differ.
All right, quite cool.
I think those people know that they don't have a job and they need health care and they see what their community looks like around them. And that's to have a knee-jerk reaction to those issues, yeah, that's important. People want jobs. And they want the candidates to address that.
Very little to address conditions of the black community. Even if we look at the so-called friend of the Negro, Clinton, I would contend the same thing even with him.
There's no way you're going to make a difference if you're silent.
All right,
and I think that's the lesson we've learned from our ancestors, and I think that's the lesson we have to pass on to young people instead of passing on a lesson of opting out. It's a lesson of you can actually make a difference and change your world if you stand up and participate.
Yet, Jamu, let me ask you, do you believe there is room for a conscientious objector, if you will, that at any given time or any given election that you can say neither one of these candidates suit me?
I don't think that at any point would I opt out of casting my ballot, understanding the major influence that these politicians, these elected officials have on every single aspect of my life. I could never be silent, and I would never, you know, encourage or think that someone being silent is a good thing.
I'm Ed Gordon, and you're listening to a special on the African-American vote in the 2004 election from NPR News. Kwaku Kushindana, though you may be in the minority, we greatly appreciate your input and your thoughts here in terms of what you've...
I very much enjoyed this dialogue, sir.
What you've lent to the process, thank you very much.
With a pleasure to all mine, sir.
All right. Ms. Green, before we let you go, let me ask you what you are asking of young people this election season.
We are asking every single young person out there, the 1.5 million young people who have registered through our website, who have registered on the ground with us, the almost 20 million loud, or not, I'm sorry, not even almost, the over 20 million loud young people that we know are going to turn out, for them to take their friends with them, for them to understand that on November 2nd, we have an opportunity to speak out for our generation and force the candidates to address the issues that are affecting us on a daily basis. So it's not just about going by yourself. Take your friends, take an ID, know that you can ask for a provisional ballot.
And indeed, go to vote. Jamu Green, president of Rock the Vote for MTV from NPR West, thanks for joining us. I'm Ed Gordon. You're listening to a special NPR News, African Americans in the Election.